Today's presenters is Mike Callahan and Sydney Dumbaya. Mike and Sydney are software developers for Westphere Commerce Support Organization. As members of the Westphere Commerce Support Team, they are responsible for providing technical assistance for the Westphere Commerce family of products. Among their specialties, among the member and access control components. At this time, I would like to turn the presentation over to Mike and Sydney.
Thank you, Elijah, and welcome to Understanding Westphere Commerce Access Control. I am Sidi Dumbia, and I'll be walking you through the first half of the presentation. So a quick note for those who downloaded the PDF before Monday. Please re-download because the slides have been updated. Also, the meeting has some issues with PowerPoint content, so some of the bullets may appear with a different sign, but the PDF has the right content. On that, please turn to page 2 and let us take a look at the agenda for today's presentation. At a high level, we'll first take a look at what is access control and its use in Westphere Commerce. Next, we will take a closer look at access control policies and the different components that constitute them. We'll also take a look at the policy manager, which implements the logic behind access control in commerce. Then we'll discuss command level and resource level access control during the execution of the command. Next, we'll provide key steps to troubleshoot access control problems. And finally, we'll have a list of issues and common pitfalls that you may see during access control failures. At the end of the presentation, we'll answer questions you'll have regarding access control in commerce. Slide 3, please. So what is access control? Typically, when a resource needs to be accessed, access control takes care of restricting access to specific individuals within specific organizations. In more specific terms, access control represents security guidelines that allow or deny a user access to resources managed by the system. It also specifies which actions the user is authorized to perform on the available resources. If the access control criteria is met, the user has authority and the action is invoked. If not, the user does not have authority, thus access is denied and the action is not invoked. In commerce terms, the resources are the commands, the views, and the bin that can be executed, displayed, and modified, and etc. The users and organizations are part of the commerce organizational structure. So this presentation assumes that you're familiar with the Western Commerce organizational structure, the role assignments, and the resource types. As a reminder, keep in mind that there are three types of users: generic, guest, and registered. Users play specific roles in organizations, and organizations subscribe to policy groups. Slide 4, please. So let's review policies in more detail. We have seen on the previous slide that access control is dependent on the usage of two main groups: the users and the resources. An access control policy is a set of directives that tie together the user and the resource. In commerce, the individual elements of the policy are group-based. In general, policies will authorize a group of users to perform a group of actions on a group of resources. So policies consist of four major components. First, there is the member group, also known as the user or access group. This represents the group of users that are entitled to act in this policy. For instance, the registered customer group. There are two types of member groups, implicit and explicit. Implicit groups are based on role-based conditions. For instance, the condition can be role equal registered customer. With such a condition, any user that plays a role, a registered customer role, will qualify for its member group. As for explicit groups, users in this group are specifically assigned, so their role affiliation does not matter. For instance, a new custom group is created, and a specific set of users are assigned to the member group, which will be part of the policy in use. When doing access control, the user is checked to see if it's part of the group based on the explicit include, not the condition as we've seen in the implicit one. The next component of the policy is the action group. It's a set of actions that can be performed by the users in this policy. For instance, there is an order action group that contains commands like order item add, order item move, and etc. The third component of the policy is the resource group. These are the actual resources that the actions are performed on. For instance, they can be a command on which will run the execute action, or a different resource like an order bin on which a command can run on. Last, we have the relationship. This adds an extra layer of control to the policy in the sense that the user and the resource must satisfy a specific relationship in addition to satisfying all the other group requirements. For instance, certain order commands will require the user to be the owner or the creator of the order before executing the command. Most commands for general store browsing do not need this parameter, so this presentation will focus more on the first three groups. Slide 5, please. Let's look at the XML to see how a policy is defined. The recommended way of creating a new policy is to build the XML snippet, then load it in the database using the SCP load utility. Let us take a look at the following XML and relate to the group definitions that we've seen so far. First, we have the policy name. This is the name of the policy as you would see in the database, and the trace is in case you need to troubleshoot, for instance. Then we have the owner ID, which is the organization that owns the policy. Next is the user group. This is the group of users allowed to act in this policy. Here, for instance, we're using all users. Next, we have the action group. This references your action group, which contains the list of actions available in this policy. We also have the resource group. Similar to the other groups, this contains the list of resources available for this policy. The last one is the relationship, which tells what relationship must be satisfied between the user and the resource. In most cases, this will be one relation and not a group. For instance, creator of an order. The group can be used if multiple relationships should be satisfied, but that is usually not the case. The policy type entry at the end of the XML is a little special. We'll review it a little later in the presentation. In short, this policy means that all users, generic, guest, or registered, are entitled to display order bins and possibly over order resources as long as they are a creator of this resource. On the left, you can see a diagram showcasing the structure of the policy. Let's move on to slide 6 to review our first group, the member group. The member group is the first component of the policy. This is a group of users that perform the actions, as we've seen before. There are implicit and explicit member groups. We'll spend a bit more time on implicit ones, as explicit is quite straightforward, actually. Let's look at the registered customer group, for instance. This is an implicit member group. Remember that implicit groups mean that the grouping is based on a role and a predefined condition. In this case, the condition is role equal registered customer. So this condition entitles all users with a registered customer role to be part of this member group. So if a user tries to execute an action, he must play a registered customer role in the needed organization in order to qualify. This list can be extended to have the user qualify for any condition in the list or multiple ones. For instance, you can extend the order list condition in the XML to include another role. In that case, users satisfying any role in the list would qualify. Similarly, you can change the order list into an end list, and in this case, the user must play all roles indicated. As for explicit groups, users must be explicitly added to a member group, meaning that you will have specific users allowed to be part of the member group without them needing to satisfy any conditions. This can be very useful for pinpointed tasks you would like to authorize specific users to do without worrying about their role affiliation. Again, looking at the diagram, you can see the member group and the member group condition link. This is very close to what you would see in the database, for instance. Slide 7, please. Now let's take a look at the action group. You need two parts to define a new action. First, define the action, and next, link the action to an action group which will be included in the policy. Looking at the XML, you can notice the action definition in the action tag, which in this case is an action to display a bean. Next is the action group tag, where the previously defined action is linked to the action group. In the action group tag, we have the usual data, name, owner, and a list of actions that are linked using the action group action tag. Again, the diagram on the left gives you an idea on how this fits in the general picture. Slide 8, please. We'll now look at the resource group. The concept is the same as what we have seen with action groups. Basically, create a new resource and attach it to a resource group. Looking at the XML, we define the resource, in this case, the order data bin. We define the resource action as well, which is display data bin. This example shows the resource action tag as well, which shows what action can be performed on this resource. We then use the resource category wrapper around both to link the new resource to the order data bin resource group. The diagram on the left shows where the resource definition fits in the bigger picture. Slide 9, please. Let's review another example of a resource definition. In this case, we are looking at the user data bin, which maps to the users table. There are a few more tags in this definition. First, the primary resource table. This is the table that this bin maps to. It's the users table. Then we have the primary resource owner table. This is a table that the user from the user group will be getting data from. Same as above, it's the users table here. Then we have the action, which is still display data bin. And we have the resource relation, which is owner in this case. This means that the user must own this resource before being allowed to display it. This guarantees that users can only display their own information from the users table. Slide 10, please. Relationship is the last part of the policy. Usually, you will have a list of relationships that are available in the policy XML file. Any relationship in that list can be used in predefined policies. For instance, owner can be used in the case of a policy where the user tries to retrieve its data from the user's table, just as we've seen in this slide. So we have just reviewed what is inside a policy. In the next few slides, we'll review what is outside a policy and how policies are tied to the member subsystem. Slide 11, please. So how do policies fit in the bigger access control picture in WebShare Commerce? Let's first describe a few things in this diagram. On the left, there are three organizations. An organization is one of the key components of the membership system. It owns resources such as a store, for instance. Users play roles in organizations. Organizations may or may not subscribe to policy groups, which in turn will contain the policies that we have seen on the previous slide. Thanks to the role-based assignment of the member subsystem, the organizational hierarchy allows different policies to be used depending on the organization the user plays a role in and the policy group this organization subscribes to. In the diagram, Org A subscribes to a policy group containing policies 1, 2, and 3. This means that for any given resource of Org A, only these policies may apply. Org B subscribes to a policy group containing policies 3, 4, and 5. Same as above, only these policies may apply for any given resource of Org B. As for Org C, this is the interesting one. It does not subscribe to any policy groups, therefore, it will inherit policies from its closest ancestor in the organizational tree. In this case, Org C subscribes to policies 1, 2, and 3 as well. Keep in mind that organizations will only subscribe at one level. So for Org B, for instance, there won't be an automatic subscription to policy groups available to its ancestor organization. Also keep in mind that organizations may subscribe to multiple policy groups, so you can make Org B subscribe to both groups in this diagram if you wanted to. In summary, The key points are that users play roles in organizations, and organizations subscribe to policy groups, which contains policies. Slide 12, please. Another important aspect of access control policies is the type. So there are two types. Both are groupable. There are standard and template. This is declared when creating the policy in the XML file. So remember in the first policy XML that we looked at, there was a type at the bottom of the snippet. So this is what that is. Both policies must belong to a policy group in order to be accounted for during access control. So standard policies are applied once at organizations that subscribe to a policy group that contains this policy. So this is what we've seen so far. As for templates, they are dynamic in nature. One component of this type of policy, namely the user group, is scoped to the organization that owns the resource or any of its ancestors at runtime. So the runtime behavior of the template policy is such that if, for instance, a policy is applied to a resource owned by org XYZ, runtime would check if the user played one of the specified roles for org XYZ or any of its ancestors. So let's move on to slide 13 for an example. When designing policies, you want to make it as simple as possible. The scenario here is to build a site where we have two stores, and two different users will be order approvers for those two stores. In this example, we have the root org with two children, the jewelry and the clothing organization. Each child org subscribes to its own policy group. Each also has its own store, so the jewelry and the clothing stores. We also have users A and B respectively playing the approved role in the jewelry org and the clothing org. Now let's assume we're in a B2B scenario. Using this approach, every time a new org and new stores are created, a new policy group must be created. Let's move on to slide 14 to see what is possible with the template policy. This diagram is a little different from the previous one. There is only one policy group, and only the root org subscribes to it. So remember that access groups for template policies are dynamic. We'll use the approvers for org access group in this case. This implies that you are part of this access group if and only if you play the approved role in the organization that owns the resource in check or any of its ancestors, and that's at runtime, not at any given over time. So at runtime, when user A needs to approve an order for store J, which is a jewelry store, using a template policy will allow the following. The order is owned by the jewelry org, which does not have its own policy subscription, so it will inherit the one from the root org. Policy 3 will be pulled. Parameterized access group that's in there will be used. So user A will be recognized as part of the access group since he plays the approval role in the jewelry org. He will be able to approve orders for that org. The same goes for user B and the clothing organization. Notice that if user A tries to approve an order from the clothing org, it will fail because the resource is owned by an org where it does not play the approval role at. So in a B2B scenario where there is a need to create several organizations and stores to accommodate business needs, this type of policy is essential in reducing the complexity of access control. In the scenario we just reviewed, newly created organizations will not need new policies created since the parent org already has the approver policy, the proper policy and the right access group in place. So now let's move on to slide 15 to review the access control data model. So this is what the database looks like for access control tables, the core of access control tables. The policies are loaded in the database using the ACP load utility. You can find more information about the usage of this tool in the Webster Commerce Information Center. The schema displayed here shows what you would see in the database after loading the policies using ACP load. So let's first look at the AC policy table. So that's the one at the top. As discussed before, there is the policy name followed by different IDs for each of the three groups, which will link to the respective group tables. There is also an ID for your relationship. So let's follow the member group path for instance. Our policy here is all users execute all site users use. The corresponding member group, which is all users in this case, is minus two. So from the AC policy table, once you locate the member group ID, you can query the member group table to find out more about the all users member group. So next, you can check the member group condition table to find what condition is needed in order to be part of this member group. In this case, we have a true condition, which basically says it's always true. So any user checked against this member group will pass. And that's independent of what kind of users they are. So the same pattern applies for action groups and resource groups. Though instead of conditions at the second level, there are name value pair tables matching groups to actions or resources to resource groups. So you need to go one level deeper to find the action. So this data model is very useful in access control. It allows you to specifically check each part of the policy in the database. So this way, you can quickly patch a policy in the database without the need to use the loading tools. But keep in mind that using the loading tools to load proper policies is the right way of doing things. So this is a last resort kind of way of fixing it. So I'll now turn to slide 16, and Mike Callahan will take over for a second half of the presentation.
All right, thanks, Didi. So slide 16 now. Let's now talk about the policy manager and how it evaluates access control policies. Policy manager is the access control component that's used to determine whether or not the current user is allowed to execute the specified action on a given resource. So when the commerce server started up, all of the access control information is cached into memory through a registry, and it's as though the policy manager can quickly check the user's authorization when necessary. So if the access control information is changed in the database, usually by ACP load command, you need to either refresh this registry or restart the server. When a user attempts to perform an action on a protected resource, an access control check will be done to make sure that this user is authorized. The policy manager will look for all the access control policies that are going to match the combination of the user, the action, and the resource. So first, it's going to filter out any policies that don't contain the specified action within the action group. Next, it's going to filter out anyone that does not contain the resource within its resource group. And these first two filters will determine what's going to actually appear in an access control trace. We'll talk more about the trace in a second, but in 6.0, if you see a policy does not appear in the trace, it's because either the action group or the resource group are not valid. For the 5.6.1 days, it's actually only based on the action group check. The third step from the policy manager, it's going to perform other resource checks, such as ensuring the correct state of the resource that CD mentioned. For example, the order has to be in pending state. Next, the user group is going to be checked, and this will see if the user is either implicitly, usually based on a role, or explicitly part of the access or member group. And finally, the policy group subscriptions will be checked, and this ensures that the applicable organization subscribed to this policy. So if there's at least one such policy meeting all this criteria, policy manager would grant access. Otherwise, access is going to be denied, and usually you get a message like, user does not have the authority to run the command. Slide 17, please. So here's a simple example of the policy manager. You're probably familiar with it. Take the example of an access control policy manager being invoked to do a command level check to see if the generic user, minus 1002, can perform the execute action on our custom command, which we've called my command impl. So let's assume we've got a simple database with four policies, as we've listed here. Each one of those tuples shows the access, action, and resource groups for the policy. For the sake of argument, we'll make it easy and say that the generic user is only in access group A, the execute action only in action group A, and my command impl is only in resource group A. So the policy manager is going to cycle through each, and for our specific example here, policy 1 is going to pass the action and resource group checks, but it's going to fail on the access group check since it's using group X, which does not include all users. Policy 2 is going to fail on the very first check, as the execute action is not in action group X. Similarly, policy 3 is going to be ruled out, as the resource isn't in resource group X. Now, as I said before, note that in this case, policy 2 and 3 will not appear in the trace as being evaluated because of the filtering I just mentioned. Now, finally here, policy 4 is going to be evaluated, and in a simple case, it matches our criteria, and authority is granted to the generic user. One thing to note here, of course, is additional checks such as the relation or the policy group subscriptions have been omitted, but these also need to be checked if policy 4 is really going to be determined as valid. Slide 18, please. So here we're taking the example of the policy manager one step further. There's two general levels of access control in commerce. First of them being the command level, also known as role-based, and the second is the resource or instance level. So command level is more the coarse access control, determining who can do what in the current store or organization. Here you can specify that all users of a particular role could execute certain commands within a certain store or organization. For an example, the policy sellers execute seller views. This is going to allow anyone with the seller role to execute specific seller views, for example, account customers view. And this is as long as they are invoking the view for the store which belongs in an org for which they play their seller role. Excuse me. This type of access control is always checked at runtime. It's only going to determine if the user is allowed to execute a particular controller command or view. So role-based access control is used only for controller commands and views. For controller commands, when they're invoked, a policy must exist which grants the user the execute action on the specific controller command interface, which is the resource in this case. Generally, the member group of this type of policy is going to be a specific role, such as the sellers in our example. For a view, access control will be checked in either the case that it's invoked directly from the URL, or if it's redirected to and specified as the view task name at the end of a controller command. Here, the action is going to be the view name, and the resource would be the implementation actually executing the view, such as HTTP for view command input. Slide 19, please. So with command level checks in mind, we now have a second type of access control check, which is the resource level. So after a command level check passes, the second check of the resource level check is done to determine if the user can access the actual resource that the command is being invoked on. So this is a lot more fine-grained than the command level. It states who can do what on which resources of the store or organization. Whereas a command level check applies only to views and controller commands, the resource level again applies to commands, but now also to data beams. I mentioned that the command level check is always done. A resource level check is done on a controller command in two cases. The first case being that the command itself actually implements this get resources method. This method specifies the instances of a resource that need to be checked. The policy manager is going to make sure that the user has authority on all resources specified within this method. By default, the method returns null and we don't have a resource level check. The other case for a resource level check is if the command explicitly calls the check is allowed method, and this could be done if you're not sure which specific resources are actually needed when the get resources is called. The check is allowed would have you pass in a specific action and resource for the actual policy manager to check it. Alternatively, for the case of data beans, whenever one's invoked through the data bean manager activate method, the policy manager is going to check that you can execute the display action on the instance of the bean. One thing to note in protecting resources in commerce, the resource has to implement the protectable interface. This interface is most commonly used with enterprise and data beans, but only those particular beans that actually need the protection would generally implement it. Slide 20, please. So one important thing to remember about debugging access control is it's usually important to gather a trace with wc_access_control enabled. And this is going to show which policies are evaluated and why they fail, if there is a failure. It's usually pretty difficult to debug the actual cause of the failure without a trace. So first, the way to determine if it's even an access control issue at all. Generally, you could see this straight from the system out log or on the error on the storefront, usually recognizable by the message I stated earlier. User does not have the authority to perform a certain action on a certain resource. And we have an example there in the log snippet at the top. So if this is the case, in order to avoid a lot of guesswork, you should enable access control tracing, reproduce the problem, and then we'll take a look at the trace log. Once you've got the trace log open, to figure out where the actual error is, the first thing you should do is search for past question mark equals false, and this is going to report the actual error that happened. Then to get more details, we'll search backward for the previous occurrence of is allowed question mark. The is allowed statement is going to show you all the criteria being checked for, and so this includes which user is executing which action on which resource. Also here we've got the owner of the resource and the ancestry tree for that resource, and this is relevant for the sake of policy subscriptions. Now in between the is allowed and past statements, the policy manager is going to iterate through each policy, and it will determine its validity. As I mentioned before, the access control trace is going to show and evaluate any policy where the action group and the resource group match 460. Anyone being evaluated, if it does fail, it will show the failure reason for that. Now, one thing to remember, just because a policy evaluated does not apply, it doesn't mean it necessarily should apply. Take the example we had before, seller execute seller views policy. If this does not apply, if the user invoking the action doesn't actually play the seller role, then the seller policy shouldn't be applicable to them anyway. If there may be another policy that is relevant for them, and this could be targeting another specific role for them that would apply. Also note there's cases with no policies applying and access control is going to fail. We've got to keep in mind this could be a legitimate failure. So this is just access control doing what it's supposed to do. If I try to view CD's order, then access control should tell me I don't have authority since I don't own CD's order bean. But you shouldn't go and update your access control policies to fix this access control error. So usually it's pretty important that you actually understand the scenario behind an access control failure and not just correct every failure that you see in the logs. Slide 21, please. So we've taken a look at the different components of an access control policy, also how the policy manager iterates and evaluates each. So now we're going to take a look at a few common problems and then a little more complex ones. For the first problem, we'll take a very simple case where we add a new view and it's invoked but access control fails. If no access control was loaded for this view, then the trace would only show a single policy is evaluated, and this is the site administrators can do everything. The reason we only see this one is because no action was defined for the view, so no policies other than the site admins can do everything is going to match. And the reason why is the site admins can do everything policy makes use of the wildcard action, which will match any action. Similarly, if we define the view as an action, but we don't actually tie it into an action group of a policy, we're going to see the same behavior. So the very simple case to correct this common failure, define your view as an action. The action name would be the view name, and then you want to tie it into the out-of-the-box all site user views action group. One thing to keep in mind, though, there's always a few different ways to fix an access control failure, and this is why you need to understand the practices you're going to be using. So here we could also define a new action group and tie it into a new policy, and then depending on the scenarios we want, we're going to be making use of the same policies that already exist out of the box or make new policies. So slide 22, please. So another simple yet common failure is when we have a new controller command invoked and access control fails. Here from the trace, we can recognize it as a command level failure because action is equal to execute and the resource is our command. In the 561 case, the trace would state resource group does not match. In the 60 case, as we mentioned, it's similar to the previous scenario, and the only policy that we're going to see in the trace is the site admins can do everything policy. Again, simple fix to this one, define a new resource or resource category where the resource bean class is your command interface. And then you should tie this resource into a known resource group for a specific policy. Slide 23, please.
So a third common problem is a resource level failure. This could be seen if a new command implements, whether it be directly or indirectly, the get resources method, but no resource level policy has actually been loaded. We can recognize this resource level failure if the action is now our command and the resource is a specific protected resource, such as the order stub in this case. If a resource level check is done on a command, we need to load the command as an action. Since we haven't, we won't see any policies evaluated, again, other than the sysadmin one. Here we need to define a new action for our command, and then for the resource being class would be the order. And then we have to define a resource action of our command interface, which would state that our command can execute on this resource. Slide 24. Next is another potential command level failure. Again, action equals execute, resource equals the command interface. Take a look at our code snippet there. So we've defined a new interface, my order status update command, which extends the tools controller command. We also have a new controller command implementation, my order status update command impl. This, again, extends the tools controller command impl, but it takes note that it implements my order process command interface rather than my order status update command. So during runtime evaluation, policy manager is going to check that our implementation's implemented interface is my order process command and do resource checking against that. This check is going to pass only if we actually have access control set up for my order process command. However, we see many cases where this should actually be implementing my order status update command instead, and only access control policies have been loaded against that. Slide 25. Next issue here, this is dealing with policy groups subscriptions being incorrect. So here policies are going to match the action, the resource, and the user group, but it will not be applicable and you're still going to get a message, an error message. In this case, it's going to state either a policy does not apply to the resource applicable organization or no organization subscribed to a policy group with this policy. If the policy that's applicable, sort of policy manager evaluation in this case, is only all users execute reseller user views, then there's two things we have to check to ensure this is going to pass. The first thing is that the policy has to be in a policy group. A policy alone is of no use to us. All subscriptions are done against a policy group, not a single policy. In the example here, we've added the policy into the B2C policy group through the policy group policy element within our XML. Second thing we have to check, we have to ensure that now that we have the policy group, that this group is subscribed to by the correct organization. In the case here, we've got the subscription from root organization to the B2C policy group. If the owning organization of our resource is the root org, then we're okay. Otherwise, we need to make sure that the owning organization doesn't have any policy group subscriptions of its own, nor do any other ancestor other than the root org, so we can still inherit the subscription from the root organization. This sort of ties into the example that CD showed us earlier. Alternatively, we could add another policy group subscription tag with our resource owning organization into this policy as well. One thing to be careful about this, though, if you do that, you're going to break any inheritance from any other ancestor, so make sure you know what you're doing before you add that. Slide 26, please. So this particular problem is one of the special cases of access control. Here we have a failure on a command being run by a CSR on behalf of a registered customer. The failure in the log would report that the action in this case is actually the become user action, and the resource is our CSR controller command. There's probably two policies that need special explanation for access control. The first one we already mentioned, site administrators can do everything, but the second one, which actually comes into play in this example, is the become user customer service group executes become user commands. So this policy is a special one that allows certain administrative users to run specified commands on behalf of another user. Policy is needed when a customer, for example, would request a customer service representative to create an order on his behalf, usually through Accelerator. In this case, the CSR is able to run the command such that it appears that the customer himself is actually the one who invoked the command. If you see an error like this, what you're going to need to do is add your command as a resource into the Become User Command Resource Group, and this is the one that ties into the special policy. Just to note, the action for this action group of the policy is the sole action of Become User. This is an extra level of access control checking done for CSR type commands only, and this is where either for user or for user ID parameter are passed in. Slide 27, please. So what we often see is clients refer to their logs and they try to keep them clean, usually free from errors and exceptions. There's many cases where we see a problem such as this one, and what is intermittent access control errors, usually for the generic user, -1002, on commands such as product display or top categories display. Typically, it seems the command itself is properly defined for the generic user, yet sometimes we get the failure. Often in case, the problem here is that there's either no store ID passed into the URL, or the store ID is incorrect or zero. A couple known cases for this, and the most common one is from a search engine or robots which crawl and index the site, and they don't pass in the required store ID. Potentially, you could avoid problems like this by using search engine optimization or its URL mapping techniques, but that's going to be beyond the scope of this talk. For newly migrated sites, we also see this a lot as well. Users have bookmarks to the old sites, which could have a different and now invalid store ID post-migration, but they can still hit site from the old bookmark and get this error. What you should do in this case, or what you could do, set up a rewrite rule at the web server level, and you could have this redirect to the appropriate store ID. Slide 28, please. So here's a common post-launch issue. The problem here in this example is when we add an item to our cart, which converts us from the generic user to a guest user, and we now have a commerce-specific cookie. And the instance configuration, which is the WC server XML file, is a domain value tied to the cookie section. By default, the cookies are only sent back to the commerce server that issued them, and also cookies are returned only to the host that saved them. But if you specify a command domain, domain pattern in this section, it's going to override this. In a pre-production environment, it's common that a different domain is used during testing, and the cookie domain would reflect this internal domain. However, of course, post-launch, you got to make sure that you've updated the domain to now match your external domain. In our very simple example here, mydomain.com could be our pre-launch domain, but if it's now myexternaldomain.com post-launch, we won't be accepting the cookies that we create, and we get this kind of error. Another common case where this type of problem is going to be seen is if users are blocking cookies within their browser. So if you see access control errors like this, and then you look up the user's ID or the member ID referenced by the policy manager, and it doesn't exist in the user's table, then this is probably the case. So here you may want to make use of the cookie acceptance test within the WC server XML, and this is going to check if the customer's browser accepts cookies when they hit your site. Slide 29, please. Next scenario is dealing with the case where access control has actually authorized the given user to invoke the command on the resource successfully, and it does return with past equals true statement. However, you still get an error message, and if you look in the logs in the browser, it states the user does not have authority to run the command. This typically only happens if it's the generic user invoking the command. Common reason behind this one is that the isGeneric method has not been overwritten by your custom command, but you expect that a generic user would be able to execute your command. Here, the isGeneric method, it returns a Boolean value specifying whether or not the command could be invoked by a generic user. The isGeneric method of a controller command superclass by default is going to set it to false, which means that the invoker has to either be a registered customer or a guest customer. But if your new controller command is allowed to be invoked by a generic user, you need to override this method and set it to true. Slide 30, please. Next issue is usually seen after access control policies have just been loaded into the system. Next time you start up the server again, you may see an error when the policy registry, which is used by access control, is loaded up. This prevents the application from actually starting, and your server is going to be in an unusable state. Now, a common misconception here is that if you define a new action, that you're going to have to define it in the do everything action group for a site admin to be able to execute it. However, having other actions in this do action group is actually going to cause the problem that we have here when we start up the policy registry. Only the asterisk or the wildcard action should be in this group. You don't need to explicitly list all the actions in the group. The wildcard is going to match all actions during policy evaluation. And this is what the site admins can do everything policy will use, as I said. You only need to load an action definition if you're going to be including it in a group other than this one. Once you've made this mistake to correct it, all you have to do is remove all the other actions other than the asterisk from this group, but include them in another group if you need to do that. Slide 31. Final problem we're going to talk about now is another sporadic resource level access control failure. In the example we have here, a user can't execute the order process commands on the order bean. So remember the earlier condition we talked about for the resource is just that the resource has to be explicitly within the resource group. Typically, this is taken care of, though. But for the resource to truly be applicable, the user has to have the right relationship to the resource, and the resource has to meet conditional criteria. What I mean by this is you have to be either the owner or the creator of the order stub which you're trying to process. Typical policies would have an AC relation ID set to either owner or creator, as CD mentioned. We don't want to give me the ability to view or edit CD's order. If user doesn't meet this relationship, the trace is going to show that either the owner or the creator is false and then get the failure message we have here. The other case is that the resource itself is not meeting the condition that it needs to apply for this policy group. In this example we've got here, order resource group with PE status, it gives us a simple condition stating the resource has to be in status equals P. There would also be a status equals E in this case. And what this means is it has to be a pending order or a current shopping cart for the resource to be valid. Think of this one as saying that you can't process an order that's already been processed, but only an order that's still in pending or an unprocessed state. Often we see where custom code does post-processing of orders after our order process has already changed the state of the order. So you should call your logic before ours has already changed the status to something other than pending. The double click issue could also be a cause of this. If the user clicks the submit button twice, for example, a double click, the first request will process and change the status of the order, and then the second will come along, they'll try to process it, but now it's going to fail because the status is invalid. For this type of problem, you should make use of the double click handler. Slide 32, please. Alright, so in summary, we've taken a look at all the aspects of an access control policy, including a member group, also known as user access groups, state which type of users and which roles do the policy apply, the action group states which views or commands does the policy apply, the resource group, this lists the commands or beans that the actions can be invoked on. Finally, we have the relation. This is the relationship the user has to have to the resource, such as being the owner of the data bean. We then saw how the policy manager evaluates policies on this criteria, but also takes into account the policy group descriptions as well. Policy manager could do two checks, command and resource level, seeing which roles from which organization can invoke the command and what position the resource has to be in. There's a few common failures. The Info Center actually does a pretty good job of addressing the first three or four that we have here, such as simply not defining the command or resource level policies for these views and commands. We still have some more complex ones, but for these types, you usually need to understand the actual scenarios or business logic behind this, and you have to take into account the special things like CSR commands, the cookies, or the double click handler. Slide 33. Here we've got a few additional resources. They're all from the Commerce 6 Info Center. As I said, the Info Center does a pretty good job of explaining how access control works and how policies are evaluated, and it does give some of the simple cases that we talked about. Also keep your eyes out on developer works in the coming weeks. We're going to be publishing an article on advanced access control troubleshooting, so you may want to have a look at that. Next slide, please. This chart includes a number of links to sites that provide valuable online resources for WebSphere products. First, we have DeveloperWorks with in-depth technical information. Next, the events link on all support pages gives you webcast and conference information. You should go to WebSphere.org for user group information and more product information. The IBM Education Assistant, it consists of self-help modules, which get new users up the learning curve pretty quickly. ESR tool is for Passport Advantage clients to open, update, and view PMRs online. And finally, we have the My Support link on all products pages, and this lets you sign up for weekly email updates for products of interest to you. So moving on to slide 35, pass it back over to Elijah to open it up for questions, and thanks everyone for joining the call today.
Thank you, Mike and Cindy, for a great presentation. At this time, we will conclude the presentation. We hope the information presented today has been valuable to you. We appreciate your participation. We hope you will join us for future presentations, which will be announced on the WebSphere Support Technical Exchange site. Remember, a replay of today's presentation will also be available on the site in the next day or two. Thanks very much for joining us today, and thank you, Mike and Cindy, for presenting today.
Thank you, Elijah.